outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
So the political game has changed yet again here in America.
Whew, it is a... Yes, it is a spicy race right now. I'm just shaking my head like, okay.
This is where I wish I had a political podcast. This is the summer.
Oh my gosh.
You would want to be able to just dive into it with all of your inane conclusions even before things have not played out yet. This is incredible. And watch how people want to try and tell you how it's going to come out when it just keeps changing every day.
Constantly. And even, I mean, leading up to like Thursday and Friday, Joe Biden is adamantly saying, I will not leave this race. I will never step down. I'm taking this thing to the end. And then literally 2 days later, okay, I'm stepping down. See you guys. It's
like, yeah. What? I mean, he didn't want to, for sure. He didn't want to. I think somebody finally got through that. You have no other choice. Your supporters, we're not going to be there for you. So better bow. And now he's a great American hero for surrendering to patriotism above personal ambition and all that. No. You can't do that.
I had to just laugh at, like, yes, I saw a couple of articles about how he's such a hero and so much courage and what a patriot. And I was like, he would have held on to power as hard and as long as he could. Literally, he got forced out. There's no other way to say that.
Do you get to be self-sacrificing when you had no other options?
when you were being sacrificed.
That's most of my stresses. I couldn't get out of this if I wanted to, so I've got to go through it. Jesus, he could have gotten out of all of it and went through it.
No,
that's what's amazing to me. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this episode of The God Journey. Hey, best thing I heard this week, wah, 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 wah.
Okay.
It's paying dividends in my life. We got it from Mandy's dog trainer yesterday. We're working on this puppy like we've worked on our 7 previous dogs. All of them came out great. Mandy, we're taking a whole different approach to puppy rearing. And Sarah and I are the ones that are having to grow the most. I'll be honest. We're having to learn stuff about our dog. But one of the things he said, because when I want Mandy to do something, I'm telling her in English what she needs to do. And then watch her not do it. And over and over again, I'm like, well, you stupid dog. I want you to like stay on the sidewalk. And the dog trainer says, you know, when you talk that way to a dog, you know what it sounds like? Same thing in a Peanuts sitcom or a comedic movie. Like the adult sound. Wow, 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 wow. they don't understand any of it. They understand your body language and they understand what you know, 2 or 3 noises.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you what, it's not only changing how I raise my puppy. It's not only, like I did the other day, I said something to her this morning and I looked at Sarah and I go, wah, 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 wah. And we laughed. And she said, yeah, that's good for the dog. No. I said, wah, wah, wahing for me. I'm explaining something to my dog that she can't get. She doesn't have the mental capacity to get it. And then when I think back, I'm praying about some things to God that I'm not quite getting right now. And I think of this, wow, 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 wow. It's like God is doing everything he can to convey to me his reality and what he wants. And to me, the human with the finite brain and all this that it comes through is wow, 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 wow. And I know I could be discouraging to people or like, well, I'll never get that. No, it wasn't that. It was an invitation saying, okay, God is opening a door here, even in some of the vision stuff that is still kind of unfolding in my heart. I'm seeing things going, I don't understand. I don't understand. That was where I was at this morning. What does this mean? And then wow, 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 wow. I'm going, okay. It's not that God doesn't want me to know any more than I want that puppy to know something, but getting it in a way that I can understand and comprehend it is more of a journey than we'd like it to be. We would like God just to write stuff in clouds and, you know, send me an email in the morning and do things that are that clear. Like it's just the words we need instead of, no, there's a whole heart that goes with this reality. And so I've been hearing wah, wah, wah all day long. Just think about it with the puppy. And I think about it with some things I'm holding in prayer right now. just going, it's not that God doesn't want to communicate with me. Mm-hmm. It's that I've got to find the way he communicates with me. And he and I have to kind of, I don't think I'm alone in that. I think we're together in how does the divine interface with humanity in a way that's different than we've always imagined it should be, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. So I'm enjoying playing with this. Like if I don't get something, it's kind of like Murray's thing from back in the day when he was talked about. So the kid asks, why is the moon following the car? And he tries to explain all the spatial realities. And daughter, you get that? Said, yeah, yeah. And the daughter said, but why does the moon follow the car? I think me and God talk like that a lot, but it's fun. It's fun being in that kind of, okay, I'm puppy-like in terms of God's presence who... And there's no lack of desire for him to communicate with me. There's no lack of desire for the puppy to please. And that's what he said about your dog. He said, your dog wants to please you. She just doesn't know what pleases you. And I'm going, okay, I thought about this before too. So, anyway, that's my best thing I heard this week.
I like the context of that. I actually had a interesting, I got into a pretty interesting relational blow up with a family member this last week. And
oh, no,
it really? Was, yeah, it was a little painful. And I just felt this nudge from my heart. Like I didn't know what to do. I knew I needed to get out. I needed to get away. And so I went for a drive and wound up at my family's ranch in Harrison, which is this gorgeous, beautiful ranch. It's got some trees and a creek and everything and really pretty place. And I was sitting on the deck and I was just praying and just crying out to the Lord and just like, Lord, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know if this is spiritual warfare. I don't know if this is my own trauma and it has nothing to do with this family member. I need you to untangle this. I don't know what's unraveling here. I don't know what's my own perception. I don't know what was actually an actual slight versus an actual wounding versus my own perception and the rawness that I am in.
That's beautiful. And I love that prayer. That's a beautiful prayer. That's a beautiful way to engage God about something like this. It really is.
Well, then he wasn't answering though.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
exactly.
I suspect he was.
I'm sure he was. And I mean, we were kind of praying through it and I was just holding it before him. And then hummingbirds have always been big thing to me, and
they're little things.
They are little things, but they've had a major impact on my heart. They've had a large significance to me, and so I'm sitting there and I'm just holding this before the Lord, and I'm just sitting quietly, and then literally I hear this buzz, and here comes this hummingbird, and he is maybe 10 feet off my face, just sitting there looking at me, hovering in midair, and just staring at me for maybe almost 2 minutes, and it was like, okay, Lord, like now that was the best thing that I heard this week was that hummingbird come in and literally like him sitting there just looking at me, like looking into my soul, which was really weird because I've never had an animal do that.
Wow.
Kind of bizarre. But just sat there and he was this gorgeous hummingbird and just sat there for almost 2 minutes and just hovered in midair looking at me and then off he went. And I never heard him or saw him the entire rest of the time that I was up there for another 6-7 hours sitting on the deck, just hanging out and never saw him again. It was one of those like, okay, Lord, you're even in that. I see you. I hear you. I see your fingerprint. I feel seen by you. Whether I get an answer or clarity on the untangling process that I'm sitting in right now, I know that you hear me and you see me, and I can be patient and let you work this through. So, yeah,
that's beautiful. Because I think that our drive is to always, I want the answer that I need so that I can process this the way I need to process this. And Holy Spirit saying, can you just walk with me here? There's more stuff you'll need to see and know. Can you just walk with me? And if you don't know, you don't know. Don't force a conclusion. I think we do that so often. I even talking about this political thing. People are already trying to come up with this is what will happen because this happened. And you go, no, you don't know that. You don't know anything like that. It's like the prognosticators before football games on Sunday telling you how all the games are going to come out, and they don't come out anywhere close to that because humanity is involved. And I love that God's just, I'm with you. Let me walk with you. What you're asking is important.
Yeah.
It'll come to light over time. Just go on the journey. Let it unfold.
Yeah.
And we're not good at that. We don't want stuff to unfold.
No, no, we don't. And thankfully, I was able to stay in it and remain patient and have some good conversations with that family member and find some resolve in that. But it still is like this lingering, okay, there's more here that needs to be untangled, but there's not an urgency anymore to it. There isn't the intensity. The claws aren't as sharp anymore. It's more like, okay, that's still there. Lord, continue to untangle this in the way that only you can.
Would you say the sighting of the hummingbird and the 2-minute enjoyment of its invasion of your presence, would you say it kind of brought you back to that window of tolerance where you're more relaxed?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. It was almost an instant recentering.
Yeah. It's a reset. And I think it comes back to Sarah and I, as we're continuing our journey through her deal, is when you're in the red zone or Mandy's in the red zone, you can't learn anything. The only thing that happens, you got to have the reset back to a green zone or window of tolerance in the trauma parlance. And I think that that's really good. I think there's ways that God does that. And if we can reset our heart in more of that love, rest, and play, even though the circumstance is still a mess, now we can walk through it in a way that will let God's wisdom seep through to us. Hope that's what happened. Anyway, I got some letters I'd love to read you, Kyle. These are,
yeah.
I mean, I think one of these, I encourage him to put it on the blog, because I like when people comment about their own stories and help people kind of see what the journey looks like. Remember we talked about asking an older person, what experiences do you wish I have in my 20s or whatever?
Yes.
And I responded with betrayal and all that. So here's what Ron adds to it. I know Ron's from Ohio. He said, when I first gave my life to Jesus at 20, if you said to me I would have to endure a significant job loss, betrayal by a particularly close friend, and a major depressive episode before the end of my 20s, I would have said you could have Jesus back. He said, I'll take a better, more comfortable life, thank you, but I didn't, and I have made it to this point, realizing the presence and strength of Jesus in the midst of my circumstances. Now in my 50s, with continuing health challenges and job insecurity and the issues that come with singleness, Jesus remains the cornerstone of my life. I couldn't imagine my life without him. Some would look at my life from the outside and consider it a failure. Jesus sees it as a miracle. I see it as a miracle, knowing what I have been through. Without going to all the details, I would say to someone in their 20s, first and foremost, find Jesus. Or more importantly, and I love this, let him find you. If that means not pursuing your own agenda or others' agenda for you, that doesn't match up with what Jesus wants for you. It doesn't mean you won't encounter failure, opposition, betrayal, even and especially from those closest to you, even those that consider themselves followers of Jesus as well. It's often a lonely path, but with Jesus, you're never alone.
That is a cool email.
I love that. Right? I said, I wouldn't have endured any of these things, but he went through all of those things. He said, if somebody warned him they were coming, I think there's value at times in not knowing what's coming your way.
I wrote that down because Jess and I were talking about that a little bit just a few days ago about, wouldn't it just be better to be ignorant, like to not know these things, to not see these things, to not have to deal with these things? Wouldn't it be is ignorance genuinely bliss, as the old saying goes? Or is it better to know and to work through and to press into? And, you know, because the comment of, but I would take a better, more comfortable life. And yet,
wouldn't we all?
Absolutely. Like, yes. Again, I think that comes back to even our understanding of our norm and what does it mean to live wholeheartedly? What does it mean to live in the abundant love of Father? Because I think often we don't know, like we hear about it. We think about it. We think our norm is living wholeheartedly. And then other people around us are looking at it and being like, oh, this is going to be pretty rough for you. This is going to be a very rough eye opener for you when you take a look at this and say, no, there's so much more to be found here. But usually, well, I have yet to ever experience in my own personal life or hear from somebody else that doesn't require some discomfort when we're moving outside of our norm or our perceptive world.
Oh, if we were born into the kingdom of darkness and if Jesus rescues us into his light, then we're going to have a lot of stuff going on in our lives that are false comforts and illusions. That's the next chapter in the book I'm writing for its time. And I've been working a lot on it. There's a lot that Jesus needs to reveal to us to help us move toward that wholehearted, truthful way of living. Most of the things that I think I know probably are untrue, but I don't know they're untrue until he unfolds that in my heart. And so what'd you come up with? Is ignorance bliss?
I don't think it's bliss, but I think at times, here's my theory, that at times God allows the ignorance to still, like the blind spot to still exist and give us a space of rest for a period of time before he starts in the untangling or makes us aware of the untangling process that he's doing in that regard. Because I think there's times where of rest and healing and where there isn't the pressures and the turmoil and the chaos and the deep radical heart change that's taking place. So I think there are those seasons where it's more still water. It's not that there isn't more work to be done. There's not that there isn't more healing to be done. But for this time, I'm leading you by the calm, still water. I'm allowing you to lay down in the soft grass at the moment. And then we're going to step up and we're going to get up and keep going.
Yeah, that'd be love, rest, and play, right? Because I don't know that ignorance is bliss. And I've asked that of Sarah, you know, for 64 years of amnesia about something horrible in her past, and now she's dealing with that and the ramifications of it. Do you wish you'd died before you ever came to know any of these things? And Sarah said, no. But I don't know that God allows us to stay in the darkness. I wouldn't say it that way. I would say God brings his truth in its time when we're ready. And there are things that we can't even begin to deal with yet. So it's not, I'm going to allow you to stay in the darkness there. It's that I'm bringing truth to that, but I've got some things to strengthen in you first. And I think that rest in the still water, I think that's a big part of it. I don't think we have enough of that. Yeah. To be able to find his rest in the midst of troubled circumstances. We see resolving the circumstances as our doorway to rest. And Jesus is saying, no, I am your rest. And I love that even about your prayer time and the hummingbird and all that. Is it wasn't that, I got the answers, I need to go back and fix everything. I don't. I'm just recentered in who he is. No. And I'm going to walk through how the circumstance plays out, listening to God's input as best I can. And I think that's a very tender way to lead us. If God dumped all his truth on any of us on one day, it's like Israel, where he said, I'll give you the land a little bit at a time. Otherwise, everything grow too great for you to even manage what's going on. The enemies and the varmints and all that kind of stuff that would eat you alive.
Yes.
And that's why we've got to trust Jesus to walk us to healing. Because if we're going to do it ourselves and we're going to try and make conclusions that he hasn't revealed yet and demand he do this before, just walk with him. And when you're in the still waters, man, even when you got to mess around your life, enjoy that. Don't frustrate with it going, I don't know what to do about that. Just trust that when you get there, you'll have it. You'll have what you need.
And I think that's what I was getting at is the idea of timing, that there are times where he's like, I will address that. And I'm actually healing it in the unseen in ways that you can't begin to imagine yet. But we need some foundational things over here first before we can even start to dip our foot into that pool.
Andrew says something similar here. He said, I can't help but respond to what I see as the most profoundly beautiful and powerful post on this topic that you've ever written, which is the power of tenderness that we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful for what you, Kyle, and Sarah have been sharing together. Thank you all for an example of what it looks like to really walk with him and being vulnerable with it. I'm the son of a pastor who's dead now, who never, ever managed to connect his faith with his life and the disconnect in him and the damage it caused in his family, because unhealed trauma is incalculable. I had enough encounters with God's mind-shattering love along the way to eventually abandon church altogether, or religion, as a place to find him and live in real community I longed for. Sharing your journey has helped me see that I was not crazy or just a trouble causer, as I was labeled, but that there truly is something rather evil and dangerous in the manipulations and coercion of others to believe what a certain set of powerful people dictate as the truth. I'm enjoying the discovery of being beloved. Love, rest, and play, as you and Kyle call it. And at this moment, I'm experiencing the gift of a loving father that my heart has longed for 36 years. I had long given up longing, but he knew, and in the perfect time brought back to me what was taken away by fearful religious leaders. I'm utterly overwhelmed by his wisdom, kindness, and genius timing. I'm meeting more and more people who are walking this tricky journey of living where the only roadmap is a quiet, sometimes barely audible voice that whispers love and presence. Though I will say this past week, it feels like he is standing on a hilltop shouting really loudly how much he loves me. Thank you for continuing to share your lives with fellow pilgrims and followers of this incalculably loving, kind, and generous spirit that animates every living being. I love both those two emails. They start with, man, I've been through crud. I've been through darkness, trauma, pain, manipulation of a religiously fearful father, and yet I've come out into a path of peace. Or Ron's, I could say right now, man, I just wouldn't live any other way. My life may look like a failure on the outside, but man, I know it's an incredible triumph over the things that I've had to endure. That's why I like reading stories like this. I get these emails almost every day, but occasionally, man, some of them like that are just succinct enough to be able to say, hey, here's a story. For those of you that are just, you're kind of in the beginning part of these emails, hoping for a light and whatever, and trusting that Jesus has it for you and he will get it there with you.
But I think even the point where you have been longing for so long that you have kind of given hope of longing. And even then, his love hasn't ran out. He's still pursuing you. He's still in the process of laying down invitations, creating invitations for you to take that even first shuffle step in his direction towards embracing the love and the wholehearted life that he offers. I love that.
And he calls it genius timing for somebody that obviously went down this road for a very long time in the pain of it, trying to find what's real, not getting help from the religious community he was raised in. I love that, to saying this is kind of what we talked about earlier, the way God wants to just let things unfold with us has a timing to it that's genius.
Yes.
And when we get impatient and go, no, I want the answer right now because I need it now. And if I don't have it now, I'm going. And we spend all our time in that anxiety, then God's stuff is going to seem like wah, 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 wah. It just is. And I think it's those moments of coming to rest in his affection for us, love, rest, and play, that gives us the best opportunity to have a open heart to how God's revealing himself. It's with a hummingbird or with the nudge in your heart to have a conversation with the family member, or what you say in a conversation like that. I think there's ways that God nudges us into his reality. We could just be patient and trust that he has this process in mind better than we do.
I love when it's wah, 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 and then all of a sudden it's wah, wah, wah. Hey, Kyle, look. And I'm like, oh. Whoa, like, oh, I heard that. Like, I got it. I saw that. Like,
yeah, yes.
You know, like,
I think of the, you got a hummingbird. I got two doves. I got two doves that when I could believe that Jesus had said to me, it's not what it appears to be, I'll bring it back to you, I could live at peace. And when I was going, oh, stupid doves, they don't mean anything. I'm just making that up for my own. Then I get lost in the panic again. And boy, if we could just see his hand, that, and I love that too. I love that you said that the wah, wah, wah turns into two doves. What? Two doves. What? And then I see something I didn't see before. Yeah. And that helps me navigate.
So how did you start to recognize in that for you in your process, in your journey, where it was like wah, 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 hey, Wayne. You know, that still small voice of that quick blurb or that hello. How did you begin to recognize, oh, this is actually God versus that is a coincidence or that was good timing or these two stupid doves don't mean anything? When did that start to break into your life and how did you start to recognize it?
I think as a very young man, I had moments like that. But they're not frequent enough or clear enough where you can go, okay, man, I know what that's it. It's God nudges us. There's something you suddenly know that you didn't know. It may be a thought in your head, like I can more teach if you walk away than if you stay. It may be, you know, this is not what it appears to be. I'll bring it back to you. There's just things that start rankling around in your brain. And one phrase I heard from a man in New Zealand, which is Jack Gray, which is it's a growing conviction over time. So you have this impulse, this thought. And a lot of thoughts I have that are impulsive go away quickly, next half hour or two, right? But the ones that are there the next morning and the next day and seem to build, like, okay, that certainly was there. This is not what it appears to be. And then I'm talking to other brothers and sisters about what I'm going through. I'm hearing something similar. This is not Sarah. This is not who Sarah is. And that encouragement just go, okay. And then you finally know when where you followed him bears incredible fruit. And so it's for the first instance I used about, I more teach if you walk away than if you stay. That was probably 2 or 3 years before I could look back and say, wow, that really came true. For Sarah, it was only 5 weeks before she was finding her way back to me. So, well, now I know that's true. I think circumstances, how they play out is a good way to know. And then when you see God do stuff that he nudged your heart and then you see the fulfillment of it, then the next time you feel that same nudge, it's easier to lean into, okay, that's where the God voice comes from. That's where the God impressions come from.
Yeah.
So I'm going to follow that. I'm going to give that some weight until I know that I've misguided myself, which can happen too.
Totally.
Because I love the way he doesn't do this in a way where it's absolutely clear. We're muddling along in sensing where he's at. And when we see the fruit of it, then we go, oh, okay, that was beautiful. Or we see the fruit of our own activity that we put God's name to and we go, okay, that really stinks. I think I'm going to walk away from that whole thing. One last email. This is more of a cautionary tale. Some of what you were trying to get to, I think, in the last podcast that we talked about, loving kindness is the only non-delusional response to anything. Quote from France. What's his name? Gregory Boyle.
Yep.
Got this from someone. I really appreciate her writing. She said, Wayne, I used to believe that. It took about 3 years for my spiritual father to finally get a breakthrough to my heart because kindness was my first response. Sadly, predators prey on such a quality. I was married 29 and a half years to a man who seemed gentle and kind to all except to his wife and his children. I left him after his anger caused a double concussion to me, which I'm still healing from 4 days later. Why did I stay 29 and a half years? Primarily, it was because I kept believing the best. I remember the kindness he would show here and there, and I thought, that's his true self. My optimism kept me in that dysfunctional relationship. I could never predict his abusive ways and lies because I forgave and forgot. So I kept sticking my feet in the same place while he kept stepping on them. My continued kindness was a delusional response. And that's the other side of what we shared, right?
Yeah.
That took years for me to finally see. What I have found in the last few years of my healing is Father is asking for me to walk moment by moment in union with Christ and stop living by principles, but by his spirit. Even kindness is a principle that does not work in every situation. But my heart was more bent towards kindness than the voice of the spirit. I knew something was weird. That weird was the voice of the spirit. But I chose kindness only for it to bite me back. So I need my close friends to keep an eye on this weakness of mine. I default to kindness. I like this. Sarah's asking that the other day, some things she's discovering. And, you know, do I have to, you know, honor my father, my mother, honor past relationships like that? And scriptures, when it talks about honoring your father and mother or talking about loving kindness as a way to respond to situations and the way we talked about last week is one thing. Abuse is the great exception to everything.
Yeah.
You don't have to honor a father who molested you, beat you, abandoned you. I mean, you want to maybe learn to love them somehow, some way down the road, but don't make that even a priority. Let Jesus do that in your heart. The idea that kindness will fix anything, and it has kept women primarily, although men too, in abusive relationships. I love that she wrote me. I wish this is the kind of thing we post on the blog so other people could see it as well. But I just want to go back to that point and say, kindness is not the principle we follow. I think we've tried to make clear that when things are abusive, step out. You can be firm and be loving kind. You don't have to retaliate fight for fight, anger for anger, but don't stay in an abusive situation that Jesus is walking you out of.
So I got a quote from, and I've heard it before, but I got a quote from a friend of mine. They messaged me and they said, heard someone say that when someone shows you who they are, believe them. And I wrestled with that because I talk a lot, especially with young people who are in their late teens, early 20s, when they're talking about relationships and specifically romantic relationships. And they're dating the potential that they see in that person, right? Like I see that they can be such a good person. I see that they could be so kind. I see these snapshots of who they could be in these brief moments. And yet consistently they treat me like X, Y, and Z. And it's not great. Usually X, Y, and Z are not ideal characteristics. And so I wrestle with that because it's like, okay, there's navigating seeing the good in a person, seeing the potential in a person, seeing who God's created them to be versus where they're living at right now and the capacity that they have to be that person. And kind of that tension of being there.
Particularly abusive personalities, narcissistic people who are destructive. They're going to have moments like this husband did of tenderness and kindness, and not just to outsiders, probably to his wife a lot. And then something triggers in him and he becomes this abusive presence. Now, I wouldn't marry that. Okay. If I'm dating someone and they keep showing, you know, they're kind and nice and tender. I really like what they are most of the time, but then occasionally they're violent or controlling or manipulative or destructive, then you say, okay, I don't marry that. Now I can have a friend who's mostly walks in wholeheartedness and there's beautiful health, and yet whether it's triggering or he just gives into fear, anxiety, and then he becomes this other person. If I'm not living with that, I don't mind loving as much as I can love and staying nearby when I'm not the target of abuse. But then who they really are, I guess that's the question. Are they, and we've talked a lot about this. There's those 7 C's we looked at quite a while. I've always wanted to go back to those. I don't have them in front of me right now. But when I'm relaxed, it's not a C word, but I forgot, comfort, compassion, blah, blah. When I'm there, that shows who I really am. But when I'm out of that, then that's not the real me. I think we need to know that in our own health journeys. But in terms of other people, who they are is what they allow to dominate their life. So if they're a better side to their personality, but once in a while they feel free to take it out on you, then step away.
Yeah.
That's not who that may not be who they really are, but the fact that they're not attending to it and willing to use you as a doormat, punching bag, whatever, whipping boy, that's reason enough to say, okay, that's maybe not who they really are, but that's who they are right now. And until they show a seriousness about attending to that darkness, whether it's getting help, getting counsel, getting whatever, if they're not managing that, if they don't come back from that with a profound apology, not I got caught, so I'm sorry, it's, you know, they're still blaming you for their anger. And that's what I've noticed with really abusive people. They will come back when they realize they've acted wrongly, but they will definitely leave you to the impression it's your fault.
Yeah.
You made me this way. If you had been different, going, okay, that's what we call abusive right there.
Correct. Because there is no, again, there isn't that ownership of, or that genuine repentance, right? That genuine recognition and acknowledgement, and then a turning away from or a turning in another direction versus I acknowledge it, but I'm going to put it the other direction that I'm turning is putting it back on you so that I don't actually have to embrace or own the consequences of the decisions that I've made.
Or even with the consequence, make me bury it so I can put my anger away for a while, but it will come back. If you're not attending to it, in particularly in the days when you're not angry, that's a great time to be talking about anger with yourself, with God, with a counselor, or mentor, somebody that you trust. It's not when the middle of the anger, it's if you're stuffing it down, then you won't acknowledge it when you're not in it.
Yeah.
And then you're not working on it. You're not fixing it. You're not finding a way to wholeness outside of it, through it all.
I don't know what your thoughts are on this. But there's also that I get a lot of conversation about, okay, they are in healing, they are in counseling, they are trying to better themselves, etc. Okay, I'm going to move forward in a relationship with them. And yet, unless you're already married to them, my encouragement has always been, unless God is really telling you to move forward in the relationship, I would give them some space to allow them to be messy for a little while. Because I know having doing some of this work in the context of marriage, it is messy. Because it's like, okay, I'm working through this. I want to be better. And I'm wanting to heal these spaces for the sake of my wife, for the sake of my daughters, for the sake of the heritage as a husband and dad that I'm leaving. But it's a lot trickier when I am living in, around, on top of my family all the time, allowing myself to be messy, to work through those things, to not get it right, to be imperfect in that healing process as I'm learning that foundation, as I'm learning how to live in the truth that God is untangling for me, especially in the context of an earlier relationship versus like, I'm already in it. Jess and I are celebrating 12 years in August. Both of us have had to have a lot of grace for one another in this last year to be messy in the healing that God's taking us through.
And to love each other through it. The problem in a dating relationship, or I'm kind of surmising this, is once somebody falls in love, quote unquote, rationality goes out the window. How many times do you try to tell somebody, okay, that relationship has some really solid danger signs around it, or how fast you're hurting the relationship has some real dangers. Can you take a breath, pause? Has that ever worked? I know one church where I pastored at, the first church I was at, they finally made a rule. You couldn't marry until you've been dating at least a year. And that was the rule. So, and it was an attempt to mitigate this problem of, oh, we're in love and Jesus told us to get married and now we're doing the best thing we can do. And you have no sense of the ramifications of what your relationship is on each other or even on your family or other relationships around you. You're just going to, you're in love, you're going to blow through that and you're going to defy everybody to be in love with this as much as you're in love with it when there's danger signs all around. And
yeah.
Trying to talk to someone in love is virtually impossible. All you can say is, okay, I'll be there on the other side to help pick up the carnage because there's going to be carnage.
It's a little messed up and probably mildly cynical of me, but it's akin to being escalated in, like being in the red zone, right? Like they're outside of their window of tolerance, but it's under the auspice of I'm in love. But all rationale, prefrontal cortex, it's all out the window. And it's like,
it often is. And often, when I do premarital with people, it's always take a step back. If there's danger signs, particularly of abusive potential, if the guy takes his anger out on you or the girl takes her anger out on you, what you need to do, if you love them and care about them, is give them space and time to begin to get a handle on that. So they have healthy ways to express their trauma / frustration / whatever. I mean, Sarah and I have talked about that. Would I have married her almost 50 years ago if I'd have known what was in her past? If all of that was front and center and out and her coping mechanisms, and I knew that that's probably not a woman that would have caught my eye. I mean, she would have caught my eye, but I don't know that she had caught my heart. When you get closer and you go, well, there's a lot of baggage here. And so I don't know what to say about that. I'm so glad I love Sarah. I'm so glad that we didn't know that. I've been so glad to walk along her healing with her. I've been so glad for all of that. Then that's the other side of it. Would I have missed Sarah if all that stuff was front and center? Now, we dated 3.5 years, so we had a pretty good, that's because we were in college, and I couldn't get her to quit to put me through so we could get married, and then I'd put her through. So she didn't go with my plan, so we kept dating. And when we got married and started living together, it was the most natural thing in the world. It was just like, okay, went from dorm life to married life, had no idea what it is that we were going to deal with. Sarah was not acting out in any ways that set off any alarms or red flags about trauma in her or anything. And she didn't feel it for 25, 30 years. But that's the other side of it. Do you miss being able to love somebody? Almost everybody who's got a broken partner, in other words, and they're still in the dating relationship, I really love him, her. They're great. Everything's wonderful. There's these moments, but I can fix that. That's what they'll say to themselves. Yes. I can fix that. I'm his rescuer or her rescuer. And I get to be part of Sarah's rescue now. I do. But again, there's 46 years of history there before this began to come out. Yeah. And now we can walk in it together. That's a hard call, man. That's where I like what this other lady said, the last letter I read. Not about principles. It's about following Jesus. And if Jesus is warning you away from a relationship and you keep plunging into it, he's not going to hate you for it, but you're going to have far more to work through than if you can trust him saying, slow down, take a breath, let this unfold, let things affirm in a better way. We, by nature, which is why we always think God is so slow, we always have to wait on God. We, by humans, when we know what we want, tend to rush at breakneck speed. That's how I used to drive. I noticed the other day, Sarah was not even with me, and I stopped at a stoplight behind a car, enough room for two cars to be between me and that car, because that's how far Sarah likes to stop in case the brakes go out or something. You've got time to make a decision. I'm sitting there going, I never park like this when she's not with me. Part of that slowing down, not pressing. Somebody may cut in on me. And I hate when somebody cuts in. When Sarah's driving and somebody cuts in, I'm like, you know, I feel like a little closer. And then we miss the next light because she let somebody come in. And now I just close my eyes and let it all happen.
Well, I think you're right in regards to all things, whether it's a business decision, a relationship, a major decision in regards to community or culture. It's like, hold on, pause, take a deep breath, and don't rush that thing. Like, don't force that thing into existence. Allow God that timing. Allow him to have that time to process through that with you and to have, and it's not, again, not that you don't take action or not that you don't move, but I think, like you said, so often we jump to that. We go so quickly into the, I'm going to force this into reality, which often I know for when I was in my teens and 20s, I think that's why God didn't give me a whole lot of steps down the road, because he knew I would. He knew that about me. And he's like, man, if I give Kyle step 2, 3, and 4, he's going to be at step 5 asking me, God, why aren't you answering my prayers now?
Or he will take steps 2, 3, and 4 by the time he's 19. And I don't need that until it's like 23, 24. There's so much behind that. I think that's the danger of commitment. You know, we always just make commitments to things and then we're going to make it work instead of take the time. Someone asked me this week if we could spend some time. And it's someone I really was drawn to and feel like I could spend some time with this person. And my response is not, yeah, let's start, let's get together. I was like, hey, why don't we just have a Zoom session? Because they don't live locally. Yeah. Let's see where the friendship goes. And if the friendship leads us to that, great. Yep. If it doesn't, no harm, no foul. We'll just step out. And I do love the idea that we let things unfold instead of trying to push for a conclusion or resolve we want before it's time and before the other peripheral things that need to take shape have taken shape.
The world's culture is so different than that. It pushes us to be aggressive, to be intentional, to press forward, even if we don't know, instead of being at rest, being okay to allow him to lead us by the still waters.
So spend more time in the quiet waters until God opens the door to what he has for us.
Thank you for traveling with us today on the God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.